This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of We Are Curious. And for those who have already joined us on Telegram, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate you joining us and giving us your feedback. Today we want to talk about a few things. We want to discuss NFTs and the digital art that's going for over 69 million USD. We also want to talk about other things that are happening within the African space, like Flutterwave's Unicorn and the saga between Mobius and Kiare, and essentially how taxes are impacting businesses. Welcome to today's session.
Hi everyone, my name is Davis Kadinji and I'm glad to be here with you today.
Hi everyone, my name is Eric Asuma, happy to be here today.
Hello everyone, my name is Felix Ucheng. I'm with you guys here today. Last week I wasn't in, but I'm glad to be back and join the team as we go through another section of curiosity.
Okay, watu wa salamu wamemaliza. Let's talk about the Flutterwave Unicorn. So I guess it's the biggest news in African startups. Of course, as our energy correspondent Nyawira Thairu comes in. So the Flutterwave Series C funding is what pushed it to over 1 billion in the total amount of funding raised. What does this mean for entrepreneurs in Africa? Asuma.
Great. I think it's a validation for founders or people building products in Africa. I think what Flutterwave has managed to do in a very short while, it's quite commendable. I think I was looking at the numbers. They did about 9 billion USD. In total, 9 billion USD in total revenues, I think, in 2020. Given that they're only about, 5 years old?
Right? Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think they've done quite a good job. My comments on that, or my take would be, I can't imagine if Flutterwave is a B2B fintech company. And I think when you look at the African continent, most of the fintech startups that have such huge valuations are actually fintechs in the B2B space. When I imagine of kind of valuations that can come out of a B2C companies in the future, I think it will be massive. So I think that they've done a good job. I commend them for that, Felix.
Yeah, and then maybe also just to really put it into perspective, Ali, I think it's important that we as Africans and as entrepreneurs, not only in Africa, but across the world, it's time when we start understanding that the moment you bring in a viable product to the market, we're going to have everybody generally look for you and invest in that idea. So at whatever level you are in, if you're an entrepreneur, what this message is really giving you is that one thing that you can decide and do today is the moment you decide to bring in a product, you know very well that that's something that's going to work into play, and that's something that's going to be able to really, in general, just give you a little bit of investor opportunities. So don't only look at it from a point of, if Flutterwave raised a certain level of aspect. For me, I'm always looking at it from a point of how many African startups are out there that can be able to achieve a unicorn status out there. I believe we have a lot. We have plenty and more of them. This is just the beginning. Okay. Africa has a lot of potential, and we are likely to see many other opportunities really open up into the market.
How many startups that have achieved unicorn status can you think of that we have in Africa?
Maybe I think apart from Flutterwave, maybe I think we can also just look into about Chipper Cash.
Not yet.
Not yet?
Yeah. I can only think of InterSwitch, which I don't think it's really a startup. It's been
Splinter for one.
Yes.
I believe we're waiting on Hisa to be.
Amen, guys. And by the way, if you're listening to this podcast, you can always be able to follow Markets as well on Hisa. I know Ali will be able to touch on Hisa later on as we go through the session.
Yeah, I mean, back to the startup conversation. Jumia is an African unicorn.
Yeah.
Again, depending on what you define African, I think it's been something that's been very, very, very contentious. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, when I look at the Flutter being a unicorn, again, it points out to what's happening currently in general. I mean, look at it this way. Mm-hmm. Savannah Fund, was it, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, announced that they're launching 25 million Africa tech seed fund. And then I think a few weeks, was it last month, Uncovered Fund also announced a similar amount. Actually, not a similar amount really, but it announced a 15 million fund also to support early stage startups in pre-seed, seed, and Serie A, giving ticket sizes of up to around 500K. I think it echoes back to what Felix says. There's this growing interest towards Sub-Saharan Africa and specifically products that show great potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually a good move on their part. So they're hoping to touch on specific focus areas that includes fintech, edtech, logistics, software as a service, e-commerce, and it's good to see that there is this much investment with regard to African startups, and I'm really hopeful and really long to see the companies that are invested in and how the space actually pans out, in a sense. Yeah.
My thing will be like a question that comes from a very green knowledge perspective. When you say unicorn status, what do you refer to? Or how do you classify a startup to achieve the unicorn status?
So generally the unicorns are startups that are being valued at over $1 billion in terms of valuation. So generally whenever we're talking about startups that are achieving unicorn status, doesn't necessarily mean that their revenues are at $1 billion as at that time, but their valuations could be at $1 billion US dollars and above.
From a VC standpoint, right?
Yes.
I think now that we are on local news and businesses that are developing, Mobius. I know, Davis, this is a topic that you've really, really, really wished. What is happening between Mobius and Kiaria?
Well, Kiaria has given Mobius quite the tax demand of 73 million Kenya shillings. Now, right. Mobius has fought back and said that if they were to actually pay this particular tax demand, that they would have to declare insolvency because their liabilities are somewhere along the lines of 400 million. Yeah, it's actually 434.3 million. That was as of the year ended December 31st, 2019. But now that had actually deteriorated even more to 649 million in August 30th of 2020. And you have to realize that there's also a shareholder deficit of 300 million. So it would really adversely affect them if they were to actually pay that tax charge. So what happened is that there was a suspension of that decision by the court so long as Mobius could provide a bank guarantee of 40 million within 60 days.
But then come on, guys, who's going to, which bank is going to offer Mobius that guarantee? I think that's one thing that we'd really love to see how it plays out. But then personally, I would feel bad and sad seeing Mobius go down. I think this is one of the, as much as it's not the luxury brand that most of us have always dreamed of, but I think this is one of those really awesome Kenyan companies that I thought and I still believe have a little bit of a future in at least in terms of the automobile industry space. So that's one thing that, because why would we support, and this is absolutely in honest faith, what backup and what tax incentives do we have for the Volkswagen plant here as well in Kenya, and at the same time we have a lot of tax issues that is going with our company that's locally founded, and that's Mobius. So I believe that's one, that's my concern, is how often will we be giving other companies, global companies, a little bit of a leverage, and we're not giving the same leverage to the local competition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Does that tell much about our tax environment in terms of, is it really accommodative to local companies, especially the manufacturing industry?
In my opinion, not really. I think our government, the tax level in Kenya is sort of, it's been built to tell us that it's aggressive,
mm-hmm.
And not repressive to some sort. Where we are seeing the government is always trying to put it out that we are taxing you depending on your level of income, even if it's in terms of companies, in terms of individual taxes. But in my opinion, I think it gives a very poor implementation of also tax policies,
mm-hmm.
because if KRA is saying that the tax that Mobius is probably owing to KRA right now, that these have been accrued over time,
mm-hmm.
then what tax collection policies do we really have?
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I think at this time and at this age, we are not really supposed to have ages where you can go 1 year and KRA doesn't see that you have a tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately the financial year comes to an end, I believe the government is supposed to have a list and actually keenly follow up. You cannot leave Mobius to start operating all the way from 2014.
Mm-hmm.
7 years to date,
for 7 years, and then you come in on the seventh year and then you start asking them for taxes. So that's one thing that I believe maybe the government would really, really need to improve on. Something interesting, but let's see how it plays. I'm hoping that the court will see faith on Mobius. And the main challenge that we've also had is that the tax tribunal is really not understanding, in my opinion. The government is always looking to raise revenue, and whichever way we have, there are very little instances where we are seeing the government win on, the government probably play a win. There are very few instances where we are seeing individuals take a lead at the tax tribunal. Most of the time it's always the taxman who's winning. So to some extent, the government is looking for funds, and that always puts the tax tribunal to be sidelined towards one side, which is KRA's side.
Yeah, actually, to add on to that, the situation would get much worse. In light of our... no, not for Mobius, but for companies. I hope people are paying your taxes and you're cognizant of the taxes that you're paying. Because what will happen going forward, because of stagnating revenues and the fact that interest expenses on debt are increasing, among the things we should know that a large portion of the debt... or of the money that the government is collecting, a lot of it goes to both interest expenses on foreign loans, so paying back our debt, and then it also goes towards recurrent expenditure. And the interesting thing is, even though this is illegal, but then again, who follows the constitution, is that the government actually takes loans and then they use those loans,
mm-hmm.
to pay back old debt, you know, which is a saddening state of affairs. Then this will actually get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Revenues will be more and more strained. And so what the government will do is they'll increase taxes. As they increase taxes, businesses will opt, okay, we need to reduce, let's say, our employee count, or we need to, you know, do cost-cutting measures, etc. When businesses do this, see, they fire employees. So now the amount of money that can be collected as taxes reduces. Sindio, so what will the government do? They'll increase taxes again. And the cycle continues and continues. And it's likely to end in a recession if things don't change anytime soon, which is unfortunate. So I'd advise people, really take careful note of your taxes. KRA will really start chasing after people, and be cognizant of the different taxes that are there. You see, like if it's, is it turnover tax? Done for 1%.
Minimum tax.
Oh, minimum tax, yeah. So if it's that, be cognizant of that. If you have to pay 30%, be cognizant of that, etc., etc. And yeah, you won't have issues.
I mean, okay, I think that again, when you talk about business taxes, it kind of brings back to the earlier conversation that we had. Even if you decide to, you know, totally be cognizant and, you know, perform your responsibility as a Kenyan or as a company operating in Kenya to pay your taxes on time and, you know, as per the amount. Do you really, really think our tax environment is favoring the manufacturing sector?
I wouldn't say so. Actually, sorry about that. Yeah. Actually, manufacturing as its percentage contribution toward GDP. I think one of the aims of the Jubilee government was to increase its contribution to 15%. Its contribution has actually gone down, which is unfortunate, and it's telling of the economic policies, it's telling of the economic environment. It really is a sad state of affairs. Actually, with regard to the manufacturing sector, it's almost as if we've exported manufacturing. We've given it all to the Chinese and let Kenyan companies really suffer, which is unfortunate.
Well, generally, I think, in my opinion, one thing that we'd really be looking at is, Let's look at the real numbers at the end of this five-year period. I know that there are a lot of challenges that our government has faced, and maybe just to, for the first time, I'm going to support the president in something. just as he said today, a lot of economies globally really took a hit in and across every sector. So as much as we're looking at it from one angle, let's also look at it from a global perspective. Some of these things were a little bit unprecedented for. They were unexpected, like the impact of COVID-19. So let's probably look at how the numbers in 2021 are going to be, how the few measures that we are having are likely to probably spur more growth. And let's see how many companies are going to come up. I believe we still have resilient companies, even despite the heavy taxation that we are going through. But I think it would be interesting to just see how far this is going to go.
You know, speaking of companies and resiliency, Homeboys brings the profit warnings to 19 so far. Felix, is it going to get any worse?
In my opinion, I have to clear my voice for that. In my opinion, I think Homeboys as a company, and maybe I would give Eric, who's in the media sector, so, and I know media and entertainment, usually they're sisters. But in my opinion, I think during the launch, when Homeboys was listing, on that day, I was there, and I remember Mike Rabar had mentioned that let us not expect their numbers to be as sustainable. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that the entertainment sector is very volatile. Mm-hmm. He also noted with a lot of concern that COVID-19 had really impacted their business. He mentioned that projects and projects that they used to do, an example is the Beyond Zero campaign, mm-hmm. that they used to do. I think something like that. They used to organize the entire event and all that. Most of that didn't happen throughout last year.
Right.
And I think it's the profit warning comes in handy, I believe. Coming in at a time when most companies have also issued their profit warnings. My real concern about Homeboys would be on the sustainability, probably the long-term aspect that this company is really looking into, just hoping that the company is likely to at least make a jump in terms of returns. They look not only at local market level, but also regional, and also hopefully they would go the equity way, which is going continental. So that's something that I'd be, but I'd really want to, Eric, if you can share your thoughts on what you think Homeboys is really about. Do you think it's, what are the futures? Is it another Home Africa? And somebody has just asked about Home Africa, but I'll just give Home Africa as an example.
Interesting. So I think before Homeboys listed, initially people thought of Homeboys as an entertainment and a media company.
Yes.
But in their prospectus, I think they clarified that Homeboys, the listing company, is a pure entertainment company.
Yes, the media company.
The media company, which is the Homeboys Radio, they don't actually own that.
Yeah.
But the directors have a common shareholding. So part of that, majority of the shareholding of Homeboys Radio was actually sold to Radio Africa Group.
Yes.
So the directors of Homeboys have... it's significant but not majority stake in the Homebrews Radio. The company that listed as is totally different from. So the company that listed is an events management company. So they do events, DJ, providing barriers, events. It's generally a services company. And when you look at their revenues for the previous year, they had a turnover of around 311 million, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Out of this turnover of 311 million, more than half was generated from managing events. And that particular segment was actually hit by the pandemic, and we don't expect to see, say, the events return as they were at, in the short term, right?
Definitely.
So in terms of my expectations about the company from a revenue perspective, maybe if everyone is vaccinated and things go back to normal, which we don't know how long that will take, maybe. But from a listing perspective, I think it's good to have an entertainment company on the NSE. And it's also good to make clear to our listeners that the shares aren't actively, you cannot
for
buy
trading
the shares.
Now.
So the NSE clarified and said they'll be available for trading in the course of the year. But let's see when they list and probably in the future. But
when they start trading.
Yeah, of course, I'm rooting for local companies. I wish them all the best. But from a business perspective, honestly,
they don't inspire confidence. Like, I'll give you an example, as in of, imagine of the gross profits, 15%, that's 30 million, just went to salaries to the directors. Now, as a shareholder, this money should be, okay, technically they're the only shareholders.
Yeah.
But if you're a prospective shareholder, you would see the fact that these are really strongholds upon that company with regard to the specific directors. So if they could sort of add to the board, add better corporate governance policies and the like, I think it would be a better company for more prospective shareholders. And also they have risks. For example, as you've mentioned, the COVID really affected them. But then also a lot of their revenues are tied towards large clients, which if they do not receive revenues from those particular clients, or if those particular clients cut their contracts, that's significant portions of their revenues going down. So their prospects do not seem all that great. And also looking at the past years, you'll notice that their earnings really fluctuate. They're not constant nor consistent.
Yeah.
That's not exactly a company I personally would invest in.
And I think just to add on to what Davis has said, that's the riskiest bit about investing in some of these volatile companies. Today, this year you've made profit. The next year, you guys are in losses. There's a profit warning that's coming through. So that would be a major concern. And maybe one of these fine days, we're really hoping to see how the real financials will really play at the end of this entire period.
I think what we can do, probably one of these fine days, is to invite the CEO.
I think Mike. Mike is always easy to get.
We can always
be able to try and reach out to him. And see. I hope now that they've listed the company, they don't really he won't change and become a hard guy to find. Now, just to mention a little bit on Home Africa. I know we mentioned that earlier on. Yes, I know there are a lot of questions that are coming in from the Telegram channel, but maybe just to mention a little bit about Home Africa. I'm seeing Chuck has said on the Telegram channel that we mentioned Home Africa and he burst out into laughter. I think one thing that we need to agree on is when we're talking about the company that came into the market with giving investors hopes like no other company, in recent times, at least over the past decade, I think Home Africa was the company.
But they listed at a price of, was it 15?
Yeah.
And it's now at 0.
It's,
what?
It's now at about 0. Something.
You'd have lost nearly 100%. My goodness.
So I think that's one point of concern. I know Eunice wants to mention something about Home Africa. Maybe Eunice, you'd say something?
No, I'll wait for the energy sector.
Okay, but I think if you're looking on fundamentals for Home Africa, From an honest opinion, and once again, remember, this is not an advice to buy or sell a security, but Home Africa, from an honest opinion, is the fundamentals are really bad at this moment. And it would really take a hard one for the company to really make a turnaround and give investors back their value. Now, for now, if you're buying Home Africa, if you're a shareholder, my opinion is you're trading on volatility. You are a you're a speculator on the stock market, so to speak.
Actually, to mention on that, among the unfortunate things that we see people do is that they look at the share price and determine that this is cheap. Now, cheap is expensive in the stock market because you can buy a company that's trading at 10 and that company drops to bankruptcy, while a company that's trading at 100, you may find that it rallies to 1,000. And it's not even that it overvalued or anything. It's just that it has strong prospects going forward. So it's better to focus on, yes, while this stock may appear expensive with regard to what it's trading at, there's possibly a reason as to why. There's a reason why people value it that highly. And presumably, these are rational investors. They've done their fundamental analysis. And okay, don't that you now buy it just because it's expensive. Do your own good analysis and see, is this stock worth buying? Are its future prospects good? And it will help you avoid bad companies that will make you lose all your money.
Davis, when you talk about expensive stocks, I always get to think of Limuru Tea as a company, because we really know what's holding Limuru Tea at prices of about 400, 500 at trading price levels. But maybe that's a discussion for another day. We'll be able to touch on that with Davis when we talk about markets. What's really sustaining Limuru Tea?
There's another company that trades at 1500. I don't think the one that owns some piece of land.
Yeah. Kuritu traded only once from listing. Only one trade from since it listed. Yeah, but anyway, God is to man, to man is to God.
Moving on.
And I know Ali has been silent.
I have, because you know these things. I prefer to listen more when it comes to markets. I feel like we cannot move away from markets without talking about NMG, which as Felix says, it's been ping-ponging in the past few days. We all know that NMG surged because of news of buyback and went all the way to, was it 20 what?
NMG traded all the way up to about 25,
yes.
Yeah, 25.15.
And then today, it closed at what price? Okay.
Hisa.
Today, when you check on Hisa Hub today, NSE closed at 19 shillings and 55 cents.
NMG.
And, yeah. It was up by around 8.01%. Right?
Yes.
So, speaking of NMG, a tricky call. Look,
Eric, you're in the media business. Tell us what's happening with your friends.
Look, I think we should expect NMG to release their results in the next few weeks. I think it's this month or next month, if I'm not wrong, right? And usually when you look at the business model of NMG, a big chunk of their revenues is from the print side of things. But now when the pandemic hit, that's changed. I think we should expect to see that their revenues were hit hard, extremely. I think they've been hit. But they have a strategy of going digital. In my own opinion, it's hard to tell if it's working or not. But I think they mentioned that they have about 240 subscribers. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, hopefully if they're paid subscribers, that would bring in good revenue.
I don't think it's paid.
Oh, yeah. It's not.
No, you pay right now. NMG has a paywall.
The paywall?
Yes, they have a paywall.
There's a difference between subscribers and paying subscribers.
Exactly.
So what is they began an earlier campaign of trying to sensitize people to subscribe. So I'm assuming you went to their website, you click on an article, you read one or two. When you read the third one, they tell you have to subscribe to access that content, right? So they'll count you as a subscriber, but not a paying client. The paying clients, they began, I think, that drive about 3 weeks ago. And I hear the numbers are quite good. I don't know how good. I think the question is how does the long run look if they can beef up their editorial team, generate original content that goes across the continent, make payments much easier, micropayment for content. I think there's an opportunity.
But then just to mention now on the stock performance, I'm just looking onto the charts, and I think looking on the RSI indicator for NMG, it's still almost on the territory where it was seen as overbought. The last time NMG hit an overbought price was at about September last year. I think the price was also just within the same levels where it is right now. That's the point when NMG had rallied from a price of around 10 shillings all the way up to 19. And right now, NMG hit RSI, I think one of the highest on the NSE this year, going up slightly way into overbought territory. Right now, the RSI indicator dropped down to about 50. But even still at the levels of about 50, because RSI, for the market to really term NMG as oversold, then it needs to be at an RSI of below 30. So that's one thing. I'm seeing NMG still at around 65. So my opinion is NMG today was just a rally, a mini rally. NMG, the drop might come, the drop might not come. I don't know. Who wants to call shots on NMG?
Eunice,
you want to call shots on NMG? Do you think it's going to rally? Just yes or no, quick one.
Yes.
Ali?
I'm actually optimistic on NMG and the whole turnaround strategy. I feel like payroll, yes, but then their pricing is quite accommodative. Yes. And honestly, I feel like payroll is where global media is going. And it's only a matter of time until they caught up, especially after COVID-19 really, really hit ad revenues, which were already bad before COVID.
Also with the ease of accessibility to pay with the paywall. So you can jump into M-Pesa, and I think they're charging how much for a year subscription? 750?
Yeah, yearly.
Wait, let me check.
But I think they have done a good job. If you look at it from an investor's perspective, Felix, you know very well, around when we had the last bull run around 2014, 2015. NMG was trading at over 300.
Yes, and
yes,
maybe
I've got it. They're charging 750
annually.
For 12 annually access.
Awesome.
And 4 weeks, 150, that's a month. Then 50 bob for a 7-day access and 10 bob a day. So like it's very easy if they can market it very well to get valuable returns on that.
But now talking about paywalls, Star Media Group actually started giving guys a paywall earlier, before NMG, as much as it was their site. If you're at Standard Group, my personal opinion for the group, man, you guys need to improve on that website. Nation Media Group did a good job, even if they're asking us to pay for the content. At least the site is pleasing. I'd really like to see how Standard Group would report their half year earnings, and see just how the paywall will be able to perform. Maybe from that we can be able to compare as well what to expect with Nation Media. But so Ali, you call shots on NMG as a yes?
Yes.
Asuma?
Look. from my understanding of the media, expect nothing meaningful from these digital strategies from these media houses.
Why did you say that?
I'll be honest.
Yeah, okay. That feels like a lot of honesty.
Because you can't compare the kind of revenues that they got from print adverts to the digital side. On print, let me give an example that I've always given you, Davis. For every print advert per page, you charge, let's say, a million, right? Between 700k to a million, depending on where it is on the newspaper. If it's on the front page. So, and imagine of a situation whereby they had like 20 adverts on the print on a daily basis, when business was good, right?
Yeah.
Up to 25 adverts on the print when business was good. These people didn't even revenue of up to 14 billion in 1 year, right? That has been declining. And right now, when we expect the results, we should expect much more worse.
NMG should have profit warning.
They actually should have profit
warning.
The question is, how can these people generate enough revenues from the digital side to cover for these losses in the print side?
Well, okay. I can't answer that one, but I'd say if you really want to look into the space, look at the recovery of the Washington Post. It was loss-making, it was suffering, until Jeff Bezos came in, he bought the company, and they moved everything digital. And now the company is in good profits. If you view NMG and possibly Standard through the lens of the approach that, let's say, someone like Bezos had towards that this specific industry, and you see that there's some similarities. Of course, you have to adjust for the fact that this is Kenya and, you know, that's the state. Yeah, there may be different user sentimentality, etc. But if you see similarities, in the long run, there could be a case for a recovery for NMG. Of course, now we won't see it, and it's easy to scrutinize and say, ah, this is gone. And there was a huge miscalculation. There are some miscalculations that they made along the way. Like a few years ago, they bought a print to make their whatever's more colorful.
Yes.
And you're like, The last time I read a newspaper, I held one.
In brief, in short, for those of you who are just listening, in short, NMG bought a printer when guys were sending emails. So you'd imagine, to you as an individual, it's like you using Telegram. Okay, not Telegram, the one that you're listening to. The old Telegram, the one that we
used to calculate in mathematics.
Exactly, that one that we used to calculate back in mathematics. It's like you using that Telegram, and right now there's a phone where you can be able to send a text message. So NMG was late to the party, but we really hope that they'll be able to pick it in. So just to cut Eric short, Eric, just so that, because this is a long conversation. Eric and Davis, we need you guys to call shots on NMG. Is it a go? Do you think NMG is really going to continue rallying? Let's start with Eric. Just say your yes or no.
We should make this interesting.
No.
Yes.
And Davis, how about you?
No. Especially after the announced results.
So yes, our bell. our bell is here. So we are three. Against two, so Ali and
so when should we look at the share price and look at
we can start as early as
after the next
financial
podcast.
Or even after the next podcast.
You know, the beauty of it is HISA provides both week on week data and month on month data. So you know what, while you guys decide, all we have to do is the next podcast, we're just going to look at HISA and it's going to tell us all these things.
Absolutely.
But then this is what I feel, the rally was because of the buyback. If and I think we all see where that's heading to, the results come out and it's dampening, the dip will definitely come. What will come after is what we don't know.
I couldn't agree more, Ali. Maybe we can proceed.
To our last discussion tonight, I'm sure all of us have come across the term NFT, which is non-fungible token.
Yes.
I think NFT started becoming popular when Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, decided to auction his first tweet.
Yeah, I believe it went for around
$2.6 million.
Yeah, that's a lot.
For a tweet. Guys, I'm going to start selling my tweets. Who wants to buy?
Well, yeah, but for those who may not understand, an NFT is a token which is, of course, based on blockchain. It shows ownership of particular assets. Okay, so you can verify ownership of particular assets, and thus far the assets have been gifts, photos, painting, and the like. Now, it's just interesting to view. For example, Christie's had an auction yesterday for art, and the art piece went for $69 million, an NFT. What? That's a lot of money. And how people are using these things is just interesting. It looks like a bubble type of thing.
Maybe just to ask Ali, for those who are listening, somebody who's very interested, mentioning Jack Dorsey's tweet, what's going to happen now that the tweet has been sold? It's very interesting. So, is it going to be transferred to somebody else?
No. So here's the thing, yeah? Assuming, of course, Felix, you have enough money to buy that tweet, you're going to own the first tweet ever.
Mm-hmm. And
a great conversation starter.
And that would be, I don't know, that looks like the one thing they should just pull in a party. I own the first tweet. And I think that brings us to sort of just understanding how NFT works. Thing is, they're not mutually interchangeable. Mm-hmm. So essentially, an NFT just gives you bragging rights. Like, this is the first tweet and I own it.
I bought it. Yeah, I acquired.
I acquired it.
So that thing, anyone can look at it, whatever that thing is, if it's a 60-second video, but apparently in the background there's an owner of this thing.
Of this thing, who is, in this case, Felix Ocheng. Jack, in case you ever listen to this, Felix is just an example. No, he does not own the first tweet. No, he didn't buy it.
Guys, no, I own the first tweet.
But then, this is my question, yeah? What will it mean for digital creators?
My idea is, I think guys in the digital space are probably going bollocks. Just trying to see, what is it that we can invent that, what is it that is left out there to invent? Because guys are inventing every single thing through the digital space. So I'm just always wondering, how much can we do with this digital space? We all of a sudden, we're starting with NFTs. Sparks are here. Cryptos are here. Man, the space is so big, yet so small. And we are also now seeing, DeFi is also coming in. DeFi, tomato. So that's one thing that we are really looking into. How are these going to happen, and how is the next generation, or how is the current generation going to perceive this? We're seeing global investors over time, and global techpreneurs, guys like Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, all of them having different opinions with these with the developments within the internet space and generally the tech space. What's really next? I believe, just when I thought I had seen enough, now I'm actually thinking there's still a lot in this space that we get to see.
Can I tell you something? Especially in the past few weeks, some of the major milestones, especially for creatives, have had one thing, one person in common, Jack.
Yeah.
So Jack partnering with Tidal for musicians. Jack teasing super followers for Twitter, and then Jack, I don't know whether Jack's was the first NFT, but it was definitely the one thing that really brought NFTs to the limelight.
Yeah, that's true.
But also, it's amazing, or it's really interesting to see what Jack is trying to do with Twitter. So it's not just the place you'll just go and drop a tweet or anything. With the introduction with the newsletter,
what's
the name? And the clubhouse
mm-hmm.
aspect spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also Twitter is moving to monetize. You know, primarily how Twitter works is that people go into the platform and then they divert the traffic there to other platforms. So now Twitter is now bringing that traffic home. So actually, future prospects are really good. No wonder people have been bullish on Twitter. It's really been up for a while, and it's really been suffering over the years. But now is when it's actually people are starting to see the potential and what Jack is doing in that regard. I'd actually like to read an interesting story since we're talking about NFTs. So there's this thing called Injective Protocol. So it's a DeFi, you know, decentralized finance.
Yeah.
And so it builds derivatives using blockchain and the like. And so they bought a certain painting. And then what they did was that on a video is that they actually burnt the art piece. And so their logic was, they need to show that they need to show that they own this thing, but you can't view it. It doesn't exist. Like, that doesn't make actual logical sense. People have really ridiculed it. Imagine having a dinner party at you're there with your friends. They have gathered there. Then everyone's like, so you tell them, I have an amazing art piece I bought for $3 million. Okay, where is it? So it doesn't exist, but I have the ownership to it. Like, these rich people things, right?
Yeah. But then I'm actually happy you mentioned that. So back to NFTs again. So for example, especially once we all know that once you put something out on the internet, most likely there are copies of it that will circulate or, you know, be somewhere. How will you protect sort of the value of that NFT, given that say whoever buys the first tweet owns it, but then, you know, we can all view it apart from bragging, right? How do you make it exclusive? Even keeping
the electricity. I think maybe that's something that we can always be able to have a discussion over, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
About maybe let's, I don't know, I think it would be very interesting as well to really understand how NFTs really, how are they going to really work? What value are they going to bring into? And then my main point of concern would be, how do you increase the value of an asset? Do you also come back to the market and auction it as well? But I think, because primarily that's how it's going to work, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But let's see. Or will you want to start decentralizing your NFT and you start telling guys, you can buy X amount into my NFT, more like an ETF fund? Just a thought, really. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of ways that this can work, actually. Do you want to co-own the first tweet?
Wow. Actually, I think that would be a great idea. Yeah. It's only one first tweet.
And then they make a spark after that. All this sounds like a huge bubble that will one day collapse, but anyway, what do I know?
Pessimist in the house.
Yeah, so, let's see how it goes in time.
Okay, well, I think that's going to be...
Maybe just one thing that we'd really just have a quick wrap-up as we go through is how today the president, President Uhuru Kenyatta, addressed the nation on a few concerns for COVID-19. What are your thoughts, guys? Just share it. This is not politics, but just sharing out your thoughts. For those of us who've seen this, we've seen the curfew extended for another 30 days. The curfew extended for 60 days. There's a political ban for gatherings for 30 days.
I know, right?
Which is very interesting.
It shows what the priorities are, right?
But still, we're not seeing any, any economic impact that the government is doing, or economic incentives that the government is upholding to really support businesses. So,
yet the taxes.
Actually, today it was indicated that KRA has actually gone short for their pay taxes by about 52 billion. So that means guys have actually lost jobs, companies have restructured, guys have lost jobs. You'd imagine what impact that is, because they can't attribute that to the guys earning 24,000 and below who are tax exempted.
Are we headed into a recession, or we are already in a recession?
Because I think the same company that's paying pays for their employees, the same company is supposed to make the annual turnover taxes by the end of this year. So like they still are, the taxes are demanding a lot from companies, which I think companies now have to like, we keep you or we pay taxes.
And definitely we're going to pay taxes.
The question is, who's making money in this economy?
Have you seen all these new cars? and buildings and stuff. But anyway, money laundering is a real thing in this country. Why are you surprised?
Startups.
You're like,
by the way, guys, if you're wondering who's making money in this country, how many cars do we have? I think the KDB registration number is almost out.
Yeah, it's almost full. Like, it's now KDC full. Next. Very soon. Because I saw a KDB ending with a Z. Arrange.
Arrange. Yeah, you're listening. So, but anyway, it's going to be interesting. I wouldn't really say we're on a recession, because I still think our government is still, we've not really hit that point where we call it a recession.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe our revenue collection has been a little bit on the downturn. So my thoughts is we're yet to hit that recession, but maybe we touched it a bit sometime, but we did a ping pong. On the recession scale, where we just touched the limit and then
bounced. Yeah, because of the contraction last year. But the interesting thing is that our statistics will always be a bit questionable. You know, when the government spends money, so for example, when the government takes a loan, and then spends it on infrastructure. That's government spending. So technically, the GDP will almost always go up because the government will mostly be spending on infrastructure and the like. Even though majority of money that's supposed to go to development spending doesn't actually go there, it goes toward, again, interest expenses and recurrent expenditure, which is unfortunate. But yeah, we're not yet at a recession point. It's a hope that we don't actually get there. Yeah. But whoever will inherit this next government will really struggle and suffer because the people will blame them for the problems. Because now you'll notice that our country isn't our own. The IMF will start giving demands that you won't believe. When austerity hits, that's when it will hit you. Hey, these are real problems that we have. Then things like inflation.
We need BBI. Problems.
Yeah.
But we'll have BBI. You know, it's amazing. You look at our leaders; their priorities are so in order. Wow, it's just amazing.
Imagine. But I think one thing that we agree is that the country is really yet to hit it, that point of over recession. Maybe what we've had is a great economic contraction, but not really gotten into a recession, and that's something that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So maybe just. To you guys as well. Ali, do you think that today's address, do you think there's anything that the government, just your thoughts on the economic impact, what's going to happen next?
Same old, life will move on. I feel like, you know what, I have political opinions, but I'm not sure this is the platform to express them. But the curfew still goes on. The same way businesses were operating yesterday is the same way they will operate tomorrow, of course, with a few shakeups in churches, but then we're essentially maintaining
and funerals,
but we're essentially maintaining status quo on almost everything.
Yeah, but all in all, guys, please keep safe. Always wear your mask, sanitize, and stay safe. That's one thing that's always we'd always advise you to do. There's COVID. We have a lot of strains moving out in the country. I think the president said about 3. We have the South African, the Brazilian, there's a UK strain, there's now the Chinese one as well. So please keep safe, sanitize, and always just have your mask on. So I believe that's it for today, Ali. Anything else that we're leaving out?
That's about it for today. This episode is brought by our sponsors, HISA. You guys remember I mentioned month-on-month data. If you want to check out cool data on what's happening, you know, on the NSC, download HISA app. If you downloaded HISA app a few weeks ago, go to the Play Store, please update. I know, guys, we've had a few challenges, but we've already fixed them. And thank you so much to our early access team. We really, really appreciate your feedback.
We have the Mondays market where we'll be able to sit down and just have a little bit of a discussion at pre-market. When market opens at 9:30 on Monday, we'll have a brief discussion on how markets are opening and probably what we think of the next week's performance on the market.
Let's keep this conversation going. See you in the next episode.